welcome back. And for all of you Father Kramer fans, it's time again. Twice a month we get to spend an hour with Father Paul Kramer, who lives in Ireland. And we have been watching, reporting, covering, analyzing the disgusting takeover of the Catholic Church. 2,000 years of Catholic Church doctrine has been terribly abused, to put it mildly. Here's something that Father Kramer sent me. Father Kramer, first, welcome back to the program. I'm going to read what you sent me, if that's okay.
Oh, yes, of course.
Very good. All right. As I think many of you know who are regulars to certainly Father Kramer's visits, Leo XIV, the Pope, his name Robert Prevost, P-R-E-V-O-S-T, Robert Prevost, right? And then there is the Victor Manuel, or Manuel, Tucho, T-U-C-H-O, Fernandez. Don't forget that. Remember Tucho Fernandez from Bergoglio's realm? I think you do. There is talk now that Tucho wants to excommunicate a whole lot of real Catholics, all right, which is funny in its own sense. But let me read this. Why, writes Father Kramer, does Tucho Fernandez declare a sentence of excommunication against millions of Catholics who believe in and practice a religion far different than his own perverse creed? Tucho is only a mouthpiece for his church, in quotes, the synodal church founded by Jorge Bergoglio, who stated that it will be a different church, end quote, a different church that seeks to reform out of existence the Catholic Church founded on the Rock of Peter and replace it with a synodal, liberal, Protestant, ecumenical, interfaith model of Anglican stripe. That means a new evangelization of a dogma-free gospel, a neutered ecumenical liturgy that expresses all inclusive lex credendi, say it, lex credendi, is that right? Do I have it?
Lex credendi.
Lex credendi, that excludes nothing except Catholicism as it had always previously existed, and a new morality of total gender equality in the hierarchy and the laity, and a sexual diversity which translates really into the formula that anything goes. All of those things are officially tolerated, not out of compromise rooted in an incapacity to stem the tide, but according to a deliberately formulated strategy, a strategy of controlled gradualism designed to precisely prevent the triggering of a strong defensive Catholic counter-revolution that would destroy a nearly consummated internal ecclesial revolution that has been going since the pseudo-council of Pistoia. That's 1786. Prevost, Robert Prevost, himself, let the cat out of the bag when he said that before doctrines can be changed, attitudes must change first. Yes, indeed. Robert Leo Prevost is the Pope of the new religion, the religion of Freemasonry and of the UN Agenda 2030, of the One World Church spoken of by St. Pius X in Notre Charge Apostolique, 1910, and the World Republic warned against by Benedict XV in Bonum San, 1920. The Synodal Church is the Church of Freemasonry. Make no bones about that, friends, whose God is the devil and whose vicar is the chairman of the board, Pope of synodalism and syncretism, the consummation of the synthesis of all heresies, the mystery of iniquity, 2 Thessalonians 2.7, Unfortunately, most Catholics are functionally brain dead, with their minds inhabiting a fog zone of diabolical disorientation that in practical terms can only be cleared away by the publication of the full and authentic text of the Third Secret of Fatima, which will reveal all we need to know in order to unmask the false shepherds and their counterfeit church and their false pope, along with their complicity with the Judeo-Masonic plan to establish a diabolical global tyranny of genocide, exterminism, idolatry, and devilry. Devilry. Don't forget it. Well said. You've summed it up perfectly. Sorry about some of the Latin pronunciations, but I think all of you got the message. Robert Prevost is a fraud, just like Jorge Bergoglio is a fraud. These people are in there to take charge of 1.1 billion Christians. Now there's talk by Tucho Fernandez of apparently excommunicating any who don't go along with this communist Zionist overthrow of organized historic Catholicism. What else do we need to know here? There's a lot going on. I'm glad to see this in print. And what about this issue of excommunication? Has Tucho lost his mind? No, he's following orders, obviously. And they're going to try to bounce these people. And if it's the majority of the Catholic Church, then we have the answer, don't we? We have a full-staffed, real Catholic Church to fight these scumbags every step of the way.
He's following orders, and it's the same orders that have been going against the Church from the very beginning. It's the same orders that came from Emperor Nero to exterminate the Christians, to destroy the Church in that day. It's the same orders from the secret lodges of what became today's Freemasonry, the forerunner lodges in the 16th century, where you had the reformers who said they were going to reform the Church, but what they outlawed was the Catholic religion, and even made it a capital offense in some places in Switzerland under Calvin, under Henry VIII and his immediate successors. Catholicism became a capital offense. It was outlawed. And wow. I remember reading about in the 1600s, an Englishman was in Holland, and he said, "They have here a marvelous religious liberty. Every religion is permitted, except the papal Catholicism. That is not allowed." That was the idea of religious liberty, religious freedom. Every religion, every other religion is permitted, but Catholicism, no. And this is exactly what we have in the Vatican today. The Catholic religion in its purest form is strictly outlawed, and they try to make it appear to be a disciplinary matter, but it is not. Even before Archbishop Lefebvre founded the Society of St. Pius X in order to preserve the traditional liturgy and the traditional doctrine of the Church, there were other priests who were also attempting to preserve the doctrinal purity of the Church, and even they accepted the new Mass of Paul VI. But even that was going too far as the Vatican was concerned. I'll think of two cases. Around the time that Archbishop Lefebvre founded his Society of St. Pius X, and they were not yet outlawed by Rome, there was a seminary just outside of Rome, in the town of San Vittorino. And they had they put together an internal faculty of theology, philosophy and theology that they were going to have teach the philosophy and theology in their own internal school of that religious order. So they would not have to be subjected to the rot that was being taught in the pontifical universities of Rome, the corruption and rot that was coming out of Rome. They were going to maintain the doctrinal purity and following all the rules of the Vatican, but they were going to have their own schools teaching the proper doctrine. And the cardinal in charge of the seminaries at the time was a man by the name of Cardinal Gabriel Marie Garon. And he was fuming mad about this, and within earshot of some of his underlings, he said, that seminary must be stopped. And the word did reach us. And eventually they sent out an apostolic visitor to interrogate the seminarians and the priests involved in that new seminary, and the order was to shut it down. Now fast forward to when the founders of that seminary were young men who were not yet priests. After they were ordained to the priesthood, one of them did a repeat performance of the same thing in the Philippine Islands, in the Diocese of San Pablo, Laguna Province, Philippines, and opened the seminary under the bishop of the diocese there. And the same thing happened again. What happened was, they began what would be the beginning of a religious order with their own seminary. And they made it clear that they were teaching the doctrine of St. Thomas Aquinas, the moral theology of St. Alphonsus Liguori, the traditional teaching of the Church, but going according to the directives of the Vatican, under the jurisdiction of the Vatican and under the jurisdiction of the local bishop. They eventually assigned a bishop to live in the seminary, and mm-hmm. secretly he carried out an apostolic visit of that seminary. And his report to the Vatican was that they are doing everything according to the rules, according to the directives of the Vatican, gave them just a glowing report of approval. Well, with that, Cardinal Baggio came from Rome and told the local bishop, you have to shut that seminary down. Huh. So, see, this is not about the traditional liturgy. It is the traditional religion. It is the doctrine and the morality that is taught in the traditional church, what the church has always taught for centuries and centuries. That is what they are suppressing, because they have a new religion. It is indeed a different church.
Suppressing, they're trying to destroy it. Yes, of course.
They permit everything, like I say, devilry. The devilry of this Pachamama worship. This is paganism that is being Bergoglio and Prevost have been involved directly in this Pachamama cult. That's allowed. That's permitted. The only thing that's not permitted is the pure Catholic religion, the pure Catholic teaching of all the centuries. The doctrine of St. Thomas Aquinas, the doctrine of St. Robert Bellarmine, the doctrine of St. Alphonsus Liguori, the great doctors of the Church, the perennial theology of the Church that expresses the apostolic tradition that goes back to the apostolic age. That doctrine, which is the expression, the systematic expression of our creed, the Apostles' Creed, the Nicene Creed, that is what they are suppressing. They are suppressing it and replacing it with a new dogma-free religion with an amorphous code of ethics, which allows for just about every aberration is permitted and approved of to a certain extent right now, they won't let it become too radical except by stages, because they don't want to trigger a reaction among Catholics to expose themselves as being neo-pagans. So they had to keep this veneer, this appearance of some external Catholicism. I can hardly hear you now.
Go ahead.
I can hardly hear you now.
No, I'm here. I'm trying not to make a lot of noise. I'm reading through again what you sent, and this is really a call to arms, a good one. It couldn't be any better. It's eloquent. It's quite clear, and I think upon this might spring forth the movement that I've been. I'm not a Catholic. That I've been hoping would come along. There has to be the strength in numbers. There has to be numbers, lots and lots of numbers of Catholics who will not put up with this synodal insanity. It's got to stop, and the sooner the better. I think what you've written here is a great jumping off point for people, and I'm going to put it up under your name on the homepage. But I think it's a call to arms. It could be much better. You lay it out exactly as it is. So well done.
Well, the Catholic people have to understand that what the Vatican is doing now is attempting to stamp out Catholicism.
That's
and
right.
Replace it with the new religion.
That's right. All right, Father Kramer, excuse me, do we get to the point where I don't know who they would be, you and two or three others, with your names on a document like this, a secession from the fraud church, the synodal fraud church, by all Catholics of good faith and conscience? Isn't it time to lay this out? I think you've written it perfectly. I don't know. Again, I'm on the outside, but I think now's the time to make a move, not later. Just my idea.
I think there are some people, there are priests, there are bishops, who are now going to understand the nature of this controversy. That is, the Vatican tries to make it appear that this is a question of discipline. And they are
No, it's life or death for the religion, for the faith. It's life or death. That's what we're looking at.
Exactly. You look at reports like the Associated Press and such, and they make it look like it's a disciplinary matter. And they're just trumpeting the party line coming straight out of the Vatican, which is this is a disciplinary matter.
If you don't
agree with the so-called popes, if you don't agree with the Pope's prudential decisions, you think that his policies are ill-advised or this or that. That's one thing, but to go into disobedience and the Pope is supposed to be the commander in chief over the entire church, and if you disobey in important matters like this, that you are somehow schismatic. Well, that is not true. That's already been covered in the in articles and in books that have been written back in 1988 when Archbishop Lefebvre consecrated bishops. It was proven by expert canon law scholars that is not a schismatic act to consecrate bishops without papal mandate. It simply is not.
Huh.
It's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a deliberate lie.
Mm-hmm.
And the Society of St. Pius X has come out with a declaration of their own saying that they are objectively invalid. The excommunications are objectively invalid. Now, they believe that Leo XIV is a true and valid pope, but they are saying that he has acted invalidly. What I say is that every indication that he is so gravely suspect of heresy, he is He is a violent suspect of heresy, which is the highest degree of suspicion, which makes it morally certain that he can be convicted of heresy already for his words and actions. And therefore, he is of the highest degree of suspicion of heresy, which makes him a doubtfully valid pope at best. And most likely, he is a total formal heretic and a false invalid pope. I will let the church judge him on that matter when things come to a head. We will find out when the definitive point is reached, when he goes one way or the other with the total war on the Catholic faith, which seems to be brewing in the Vatican at the present time.
Good. So
these excommunications are absolutely invalid. None of the men named, none of the faithful who go to the Society of St. Pius X masses, none of them are excommunicated. None of them who go to the traditional masses are excommunicated, because they acted under what they perceived to be a state of necessity. I am of the belief, the conviction, that it is a true state of necessity, a true emergency in the church that justifies the consecration of bishops. But let's suppose, for the sake of argument, supposing that they were wrong. Still, according to the letter of the law, they do not incur any automatic excommunication, because they believe that they are acting under a state of necessity. That's the letter of the law. This is an outright fraud that Tucci Fernandez and Leo XIV, Robert Prevost, are perpetrating on the church by saying that these people are all excommunicated automatically. That is, they're bold-faced liars.
When did they make that statement?
Yesterday.
Wow. I didn't
know. Tucci came out with the declaration was made by Tucci Fernandez.
Well, we knew he was a troublemaker back in the day. We did.
And this is the thing. The enemy is, for them, the enemy is the Catholic religion, the Catholic Church. They say that they're reformers. Well, John Calvin was reforming the church? No. He outlawed the Catholic Church where he had power. These people are not reformers. These are revolutionaries who are out to destroy the Catholic Church.
Right.
There's only one place now in the world where they allow the traditional Catholic liturgy, and that is in communist China. Why? Because Bergoglio reached an agreement with the communist regime in China, so that the so-called Patriotic Association, which is a schismatic church that is completely under control of the Chinese Communist Party, they reached an agreement so they would have some modus vivendi between the Vatican and the Chinese Communist government in the operation of that so-called Patriotic Association. In so doing, the true Catholic Church, faithful to all the traditional teaching, traditional to the canonical traditions and to the teaching of the church, the underground church of China was thrown under the bus, so that this communist-approved organization, all their bishops and priests had to have approval of the Communist Party of China, and they're the only ones who are allowed to be ordained priests or consecrated bishops. That's the one that gets the Vatican approval, and they're allowed to operate and without any sanction from the Vatican. They're not declared excommunicated. It is only the ones who are faithful to the Catholic teaching. Those are the ones who they say are excommunicated. But those who are completely under the communist regime of China, they're not excommunicated. That shows you the true colors of these people in the Vatican.
Sure does. Wow. Well, I just want to go back to our earlier visits. You had Fernandez nailed. It didn't take me long to figure this guy out. He's a primary agent of destruction that was put into the hierarchy of the Vatican, and he's fulfilling his duties. I still think we have to, you have to get together with two or three others, and this has to be, the war has to be declared on these frauds in a formal sense with people of stature like you, who are honored around the world and looked up to, and there are a couple of others that you could think of, I'm sure. And I think I think it's time we do it right here on the program. Unless something is done in terms of organizing the power of the true believers in the church, the real Catholics, they've got to be somehow empowered, and they have to know that they're critical now, and they've got to work together. Well, yeah, I don't think it'll be hard to get them to. When they understand fully the danger that is confronting them, they should immediately move to strike these cretins down. They have to. Otherwise, the church will fall into terrible disarray, a very bad and dark time for the church. If it survives, I don't know. But I just think you've got to do something as a group. Call on all of the faithful to move in the direction of saving the church and expelling the filth that has somehow gotten into the highest levels of power.
My gut feeling in this matter is that in their attempt now to definitively and finally stamp out Catholic tradition, they have lit the fuse on a powder keg that's going to explode in their faces.
Good.
This is the moment. This is the flashpoint. This is where things explode, and they are the ones who set it off, and they don't even realize. But they're going to realize soon enough that they have set it off with this excommunication business. If I can compare it to history, like the movement for independence of Ireland from the British Crown, the Easter Rising in 1916, that lit the fuse on the powder keg, which the rest is history. Which Ireland for the greater part of Ireland, freed itself from British rule because of that. So when they came in and used brute force to put down that uprising, they set something else in motion that they weren't anticipating. And this is exactly what's happening in the Catholic Church today. Prevost and Tucho, they are the ones who have ignited the response that is long overdue since the Second Vatican Council. The proper response would have been to resist those reforms to change the Mass, to change the religion.
Uh-huh.
The late Malachy Martin was talking about this one time. I was in fact talking with him. He had given interviews on various radio programs, and I was talking with him about that and about the topics he was discussing, about the Vatican II reforms, and I mentioned in particular Archbishop Lefebvre, and especially Bishop Castromeyer, who had a diocese in Campos, Brazil. And I said to Malachy, if only the bishops all around the world had responded to these subversive Vatican reforms the way Bishop Castromeyer had responded.
Mm-hmm.
What he did was, when a letter came from Rome that they have to get rid of the traditional Mass and adopt the new Vatican II Masonic liturgy. He read the letter. He said nothing. He called his driver. He drove up to visit his vicar general, I believe it was, or chancellor, his vicar general, I believe. And he walked into the office. He threw the letter down on the vicar general's desk, and he said, "This is impossible." And they decided right there that they were going to resist. They were not going to adopt the changes. And they maintained the traditional liturgy until his mandatory retirement at the age of 75.
Mm-hmm.
And then a new bishop was appointed. The new bishop came in, went to the cathedral, celebrating the new rite of Mass. The cathedral was filled with Catholics. And as soon as the new bishop began the new Mass in the vernacular language, the new rite, the Protestantized, secularized, Masonized new rite, every person in that cathedral just walked out, and the whole cathedral just emptied in front of the bishop with his new Mass. So wow. I said to Malachy, if all the bishops had done that,
mm-hmm.
Pope Paul VI would have been publicly humiliated by the whole church, and he would have withdrawn the reforms. He would have been in his own humiliation and his own embarrassment. He would have withdrawn those reforms. Malachy said to me, "But when you're talking about Campos," he says, "there we are talking about saints. That's the difference. The other bishops, their policy was to go along to get along. But those who stood up for the faith were very few. And the others, well, I remember, I was alive back then. I know the mentality. They believed in error. They believed that these changes were ill-advised, but we have to be obedient to the Pope, they thought. But the fact is, in matters of the liturgy, it is according to Catholic dogma. It is an article of faith. It is solemnly defined in the dogmatic canons of the Church, in the solemn professions of the Church, that the Pope does not have the power to abolish the traditional rite of Mass and replace it with a newly fashioned rite. That is against the faith. That is against what is called the apostolic tradition, which is the traditional rite is rooted in the apostolic tradition, and therefore the rite that has been handed down in the Roman Church must be preserved, and it is the duty of the Pope, it is the duty of the papal office to preserve that rite in its purity. They do not have the power from God to abolish that rite and replace it with something substantially different, which is exactly what they did.
Mm-hmm.
So it is the change from the traditional Mass that went from Pope Gregory the Great to Pope Pius V up until Pope Pius XII and was finally changed by Paul VI. To change that Mass into the new rite, this new ecumenical Masonized rite, that is a schismatic act. And the great theologians in the Church explaining what is the Church's doctrine and the liturgy, like I said, it was solemnly declared by the Council of Constance that the Pope does not have the power to change the rite. The Pope must preserve the rite. He can't mm-hmm. change the traditional rite. The Pope mm-hmm. is bound to the traditional rite. And therefore, you had the greatest theologians, like the theologian of Pope Eugenius IV, who was the Pope of the Council of Florence. That theologian's name was Juan de Torquemada. And he explained,
Torquemada, Torquemada. Okay, I know.
His Tomás de Torquemada was the one who's more known in history among people. That was his cousin, but it was Juan de Torquemada who was the theologian of the Council of Florence, and then you had Francisco Suarez, who was given a title by. I'm trying to think of the name of the Pope at the time. I think it was Paul the Fifth, it could have been. I think it was. I'm not sure which Pope it was now. To be honest, but he was given the title Doctor Eximius Epius, which is the pious and excellent doctor. That was Francisco Suarez, and these theologians explained. Basically following the doctrine of Pope Innocent III, that if a pope were to change the rites and attempt to impose those new rites on the church, it would be the pope would become schismatic, not the people who resist the pope. Mm-hmm. Pope Innocent III said that people have the right to resist such changes. That's what Pope Innocent III wrote. And that's why these theologians said it is the Pope who becomes a schismatic if they insist on changing the rites. And this, of course, is rooted in the teaching, the infallible teaching of the Council of Constance, the Council of Trent, the profession of faith of the First Vatican Council, which binds the Catholic conscience to the traditional rites of the liturgy, of the Mass and the solemn administration of the sacraments. Those rites cannot be substantially altered the way they altered them, they changed them at Vatican II. And to change them, that is an act of schism. That is schismatic. Because the bonds of communion of the Church are the bonds of faith, the bonds of worship, which is the sacraments, the Mass and the sacraments, the sacred rites, and governance. So if a person rebels against the Pope, if a person rebels against the legitimate authority of the Pope, he's schismatic. If a person rebels against the traditional rites of the Church, whether that person be a simple priest or whether that person be a pope, to rebel against and change the rites and oppose the rites of the Church, that is schismatic. And to obstinately hold to doctrines that are contrary to the Catholic faith, because it is heresy, it is also schismatic, because one ceases to be in communion with the Church for heresy. So heresy, for rebelling against the traditional rites of the Church, or rebelling against the legitimate authority of the Pope, or refusing to be in communion with the Church, that is schism. And that what that means is that Prevost and Francis before him, Bergoglio, they are the schismatics. They are the schismatics because they have, for the first time in history, formally suppressed and forbidden the traditional rite of Mass and the traditional rites of the sacraments. Now, Pope Paul VI introduced the new Missal, the new Mass, but he did not formally impose it. He used language that made it appear that it was being imposed by law. But you read it carefully, nothing was made obligatory about using that new mass. And the reason why, because there were cardinals like Cardinal Ottaviani and Cardinal Bacci, and they were supported by other cardinals in the Church who said that if the Pope would impose that new rite with the legal formalities that would canonically impose it on the whole Church, he said in that case they would very publicly break with the Pope. And the Pope did not want to have that kind of rebellion on his hands. That would threaten the whole revolution. So Paul VI So Paul VI compromised, and he used a formulation of language that was all verbal sleight of hand. It made it appear to make it obligatory, but it made nothing obligatory. And that's the trick that they use in the authority figures in the church. The man I was working with in Canada, Father Nicholas Gruner, he told me the same thing. There was a document coming from the Archdiocese of Montreal that was basically forbidding the any kind of promoting of some private revelation.
Okay.
And Father Gruner was not yet a priest. He was still a layman. And he read it carefully, and he said, "This document doesn't forbid anything." So he went to the cathedral, to one of the priests in the cathedral, and he said, "I read this document carefully. It gives the impression, and people think that it's forbidden to speak of that private revelation in public, that you're not allowed to publicly propagate this message." He said, "But I read the document carefully. It doesn't forbid anything. My reading is that it doesn't forbid anything." And the priest told him, "We deliberately wrote it that way."
Well,
that's what Paul VI did.
Yeah,
that is what Paul VI did in his decree called Missale Romanum, which supposedly imposed the new rite of mass on the church. The difference is that Bergoglio, for the first time, Bergoglio formally suppressed and forbid the traditional rite of mass, and that is a schismatic act.
Oh yeah, and you bet it is. What would Malachy Martin's position be today on this? What would he be doing? What would he be saying? You knew the man.
Yes. Well, I don't have to guess about what he would do. He said what he would do. He said, when there will be the collapse at the center, meaning the center of the church, the central administration of the church, when that collapses, when the Vatican goes under and is taken over, when the Vatican is completely taken over by the enemy, he said he will publish the third secret of Fatima. That's what he said. That would be his response, would be to publish the third secret of Fatima, because the third secret of Fatima tells us that there's going to be this movement in the church to change the liturgy, to change the mass. And the third secret of Fatima says that people should not have anything to do with these changes in the mass. They should resist these changes, because by stages, this will lead to the total abolition of the mass. And you're going to have a new church, a different church, that's going to have a different kind of worship, and it's going to have no mass. There will no longer be any mass in this new church.
Got it. Ken, all right. He had, I assume, a copy of the third prophecy. Does his estate, or does anyone you know, have a copy that might be released on his behalf at this point, because he would have done it? Is it something we should release?
There may be a copy in his papers.
I'll bet there is. Just a thought. But that would be what his you knew. That would be a fulfillment of his wishes. Nothing wrong with that. Maybe contacting his estate would be not a waste of time at all. I don't know. If he told you that, chances are he may have said the same thing to others.
Some individuals have approached those who are in possession of his papers, and all I can say is the reprisals that they would be subjected to would be severe, to put it mildly.
Are we talking about somebody being bumped off? What are we saying here?
Well, something of that nature, yeah.
If it's just a synodal church dictating some punishment, I don't think that should be worried about much. Anyhow,
it's something much more final than that.
Okay, all right, we get it. Well, I'm here to help. If it's to be published, I'd be more than happy to give you the forum to do it.
The person in question was speaking of what I will euphemistically term what Stalin used to call the supreme measure of correction. That's what we needed out.
All right, I got it. Well, we are pretty clear that Maliki understood where things were likely going to go, or he wouldn't have made that statement. He's a brave man.
Maliki's papers remain hidden, because if Maliki's papers were released, well, someone would get the supreme measure of correction.
Got it. All right. Okay. So what's next? Your statement will be, I'm sure, passed around widely, or probably already has. I'll put it up under your name. What's next? Where do we go next?
There are others who are coming out with longer, more detailed statements, more systematically formulated statements, but they are longer. I tried to crystallize everything in a brief statement, because I understand the power of something brief like that. But I also understand the significance of something that is more systematically formulated, and those things are coming out now. And this is going to spread like wildfire now in the church. It's going to wake up many Catholics. Many Catholics are going to wake up. They're going to understand that what is being suppressed is Catholicism. This is not about obedience. It's not about the unity of the church. They're always talking about, we have to safeguard the unity of the church. We have to excommunicate these people. We have to come down hard on them. No, it has nothing to do with the unity of the church. It has everything to do with the uniformity and dictatorship of the new religion, of the new false church, the new counterfeit church, and completely marginalizing and outlawing the Catholic religion that has existed for 2,000 years before this new church came into being.
Okay.
This different church, this synodal church, this Masonic, Church of the United Nations agenda.
Oh, I would throw the word Zionist in there too, but that's just me. But yes, it's good
Zionist
to see the word.
Communist church. Yes.
Yes, it's good to see Masonic in there. It's deserved. It should be there. Zionist, communist, Masonic, synodalist church. Fraud of the first magnitude. Wow. Prevost looked to me, you can't tell a book by its cover always, but he looked very slimy and seedy to me, the way he comported himself. I just had no...
I noticed the same thing. That's why I say he is a rat.
Well said. Well, we talked about that on the program here. You very honorably held back judgment until you let him show himself, and then you just laid it out. It was very impressive. All right, Father Kramer, thank you for the update. Thank you for sending what you have written. It will be posted shortly, and we will talk in 2 weeks or thereabout. You be safe out there now, all right?
Okay.
Good night,
bye
my
now.
Friend. All right. Father Paul Kramer. And there's quite an update for you. okay, big things happening. Have a good weekend, have a safe weekend, and do remember the good about the fourth. Don't get caught up on a commercialization or the hustle or any of that. Don't think of what we have in the White House right now as being anything closely or remotely resembling what founded this great nation, because it didn't. Have a good weekend. We'll talk on Monday. Take care.